If you're visiting for the first time today, you might wonder what's going on with the stage. It's a reminder, we're in a series right now called Better Together, with the premise that if we are God's Legos, then when we allow Him to connect us together in relationships and in community, that we can grow better, that we can care for one another better, and that we can live out the purposes God has for us better together. We're not meant to be lonely Legos that are disconnected, but when we come together, we can become more than we ever imagined. Now, we've been in this series for a few weeks. We have two more after this, but you may have been wondering at some point, is he ever going to show a clip from the greatest movie ever made, the Lego Movie? Yes, we are. Because this movie was what? It was awesome. Everything is awesome. Now, to refresh your memory, this is an epic story of a man named Emmett. He is a Lego construction set guy. That's him right there with his powerful wrench standing there. And Emmett thinks he's just a normal, everyday Lego piece that really doesn't have anything special about him until one day he discovers that, in fact, there's a prophecy and it's about him. He is the special. And it's his destiny to save the Lego universe. Now, why does he need to save the Lego universe? Because there's a villain in the story. His name is Lord what? Business. Lord Business. Lord Business had this nefarious plan to maintain control over all the Legos. Now, what we're going to see right now in a clip, I'll set this up, is Emmett, who has lived all of his life in this one little cityscape kind of landscape, has just found himself broken through a wall, and now he's in a strange Legoland with unfamiliar pieces. It looks different. Everything has changed, and he's trying to figure it out. And he's got a companion, Wildstyle, and she is going to help him kind of understand what's happening. So let's jump in here.
Hey, listen, do you think you can explain to me, like, why I'm dressed like this and what those big words in the sky were all about and, like, where we are in time?
Your home, Bricksburg, is one of many realms in the universe. There's also this one, Pirate's Cove, Knight's Club, Viking's Landing, Clown Town, a bunch of others we don't need to mention.
Mm-hmm.
Lord Business, or as you think you know him, President Business, stole the Craggle, the most powerful object in the universe.
Blah, blah, blah. Proper name, place name, backstory stuff.
Is the special.
I'm so pretty. I like you, but I'm angry with you for some reason.
Tower at the end of the universe, put the piece of resistance onto the Craggle, and disarm it forever.
Great. I think I got it, but just in case, tell me the whole thing again. I wasn't listening.
Okay. All the people of the universe were once free to travel and mingle and build whatever they wanted. But President Business was confused by all the chaos. So he erected walls between the worlds and became obsessed with order and perfection. And he stole a mysterious secret super weapon called
the Craggle!
And he hired Bad Cop to hunt down all the master builders who were always changing everything. And those of us who remained, well, we went into hiding, built the tunnels to survive. And we searched for the piece of resistance, the only thing that can stop the Craggle.
Craggle. I know that. It might have been that cop, but he said something about the Craggle. President Business was going to use the Craggle to end the world in 3 days. Yeah, I can't make any sense of it.
Taco Tuesday? I knew that was suspicious. There's no time to lose. We must find Vitruvius and get to the office tower before it's too late.
Okay. How scary can someone's office be?
Okay. I hope you can value the self-restraint I demonstrated this morning by not just watching the entire movie and at the end saying, well, let's pray. That's so good. So you got the story, right? Lord Business was confused by all the chaos. These Lego sets were mixing together, and things weren't like he liked them to be. So he erected these walls in between the realms to ensure that these Legos would stay separate and everyone would be like he liked. And in fact, he actually had a master plan to use the Craggle, which we discover later was crazy glue, and he was going to glue all the pieces together so that no one would ever change anything and everything would be just like he liked it. I remember watching this movie and thinking that more and more I identify with Lord Business. I get confused by messiness and change and the unknown, and I think a lot of Christians do as well. See, Christians, in our attempt to protect this thing and to purify and to live this life we think God wants us to live, we often build walls up. We focus on what divides us rather than on what unites us. But what I want us to see today is when we put up these artificial realms, it ends up cutting us off from one another. And when that happens, we discover that these walls become a major barrier to what God's actually called us to do. So this morning in our kind of series on community called Better Together, I want to remind you, why are we here? What are we doing? And how does breaking down some of these walls actually help us do it better? So here it is. What is our purpose? Well, one thing I resonated with the Lego movie was the thought that all of us, in a sense, really are the special. We're loved by God. We're called by Him into this thing that He's doing. What is that? Well, if you were here in week one, we learned that God created us to reflect His image. He is a God that lives in community. God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Spirit. And so when He created us and said, I want you to reflect me, He created us with a need for community. And if you remember, the very first thing He said that was not good in the whole universe was, it's not good that people are isolated and alone. They're disconnected. So even though we rebelled against God, even though we said, God, we're going to kind of live disconnected, He has not given up on His master plan. He has a master plan, and He's at work behind the scenes, just like Lord Business. But unlike Lord Business, God's master plan is not to erect walls, but to break them down, to bring people together. And so this great end of our movie, the movie that we're in, this real life movie that we're in, ends in something that we see in Hebrews chapter 12. It's a beautiful description and a reminder to us about something. You see, God's people have always been fixated on, where are we supposed to worship? Where are we supposed to worship God? Is it on this mountain? Is it on this mountain? Is it over here? And we tend to put up walls so that people that shouldn't be there don't come in. And we're always focused on where. But as Jesus said to a woman by a well, and then later we see here in Hebrews chapter 12, it's not about worshiping at a physical mountain. Now look what Hebrews says, verse 22 of chapter 12. No, it's about you coming to Mount Zion. You have come to Mount Zion, to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, and to countless thousands of angels in a joyful gathering. See, this is a glimpse of our destiny. This is where we're headed. This is the end of the script. It's a city. Our goal in life is not just to get to heaven and float on clouds. No. Our goal is a city. Our goal is a gathering. He goes on and says, you have come to the assembly of God's firstborn children whose names are written in heaven, and you have come to who? What does it say? God Himself, who is the judge over all things. You've come to the spirits of the righteous ones. Righteous is a Bible word that means accepted by God. You have come to the spirits of the ones who've been accepted by God in heaven, who now have been made perfect. Our destiny is an assembly. It's a family. I love this. Our destiny is not just a place, but it's really God Himself is our destiny. And our destiny is to live forever among people who have finally and fully been who they were created to be all along. These people that are made perfect in the eyes of God. And then He says this, you have come to Jesus, the one who mediates the new covenant between God and people, and to the sprinkled blood which speaks of forgiveness instead of crying out for vengeance like the blood of Abel. Now, I don't want to lose you here. This is pretty dense, but I want you to see something powerful. Remember, this is a description of this city that we're coming to, this thing that God is building. And what makes this city, this destiny possible, is Jesus Christ. He mediates the new covenant. He's the architect of this new city. And we live in a world that, I don't even have to prove it to you, I could just say this and you would go, yeah. We live in a world that is violent, that is angry, that is proud, that is evil. And the way the Bible describes it is, we live in a world that's built on the blood of Abel. Remember, Abel was the young man, the brother who was killed by his brother Cain, the first murder in the Bible. And ever since, the blood has kind of echoed out, and we live in a violent world because of that. But the world that is to come is not going to be built on the blood of Abel. It's going to be built on the blood of Christ, who gave Himself to fulfill God's dream to set the lonely in families. This is the destiny. This is a great contrast between two cities, the cities that we see in our world today and the city that God is building, a world built on the blood of Abel and a world that's going to be built on forgiveness instead of vengeance. And I love how Dallas Willard has said it, and we've quoted this several times to remind us where we're going. He said, God's aim in human history is the creation of an inclusive community of loving persons, with himself included as its primary sustainer and most glorious inhabitant. This is where we're going. God's dream is that all of his Legos would finally and forever be put together, better together, and that we'd live in a city that's not founded on vengeance, but on forgiveness. And this is the beauty that we hold out to the world. This is the announcement that we make, that the announcement is there's a city and we can go there. So what's our part? If this is God's aim in human history, where do we play a part in all this? He's the master builder. We're the Legos. What do we do? Well, remember, Hebrews said this a few times, but we'll look at it here. He said, you have come to Mount Zion. You have done this. And it begs the question, how have we come to a city that's not built yet? Because I don't know about you, but it still looks like the blood of Abel is driving a lot of things in our world. I don't feel like all those beautiful things we just read in Hebrews, that doesn't seem like everyday Colorado Springs 2015. How in the world have we already come to a city that hasn't been built yet? To me, I think the answer to that is this. I think God is asking us to join him now in building a city that's not yet. I think God is asking us to join him now in building a city that is not yet. And we build this city by the way that we live with each other now. We build the city by the way that we welcome others into the city now. We build the city by the way that we take our city out into the world now. It's like the song that we sang earlier that Kevin had written, that we live like we are, that we live now like we're citizens of a city that's not yet. And we let that not yet drive how we live today. And doing that, trying to live now in light of the not yet, is something that we do better together. We need each other for it. But there's a problem with trying to do this. There's a problem with trying to do this, and I want to explain what this problem is today and see if we can tackle it together. We saw the problem a little bit in this Lego movie, but let me describe it another way. I love when my kids get a brand new Lego set. It's a box, and on the cover of this box is something great. Maybe it's a Death Star, or maybe it's a trash compactor scene from Star Wars, or maybe it's a race car or something. And you look at it and you think, there's no way I would know how to build this. But you open up the set, and inside are all the pieces you need, plus an instruction manual. And it's pretty simple. And my kids will get these sets, and they'll build them all together, and I'm so thrilled to see that happen. But then I start to get nervous and worry about this. When they take the model apart, where are all the pieces going to go? Yeah, because I don't know about you, I would like them to put the pieces back into the box, but instead what they do is they have a giant vat, and they just throw all the pieces in there. And here's some like $75 Lego set, and they just throw it in with all the other sets, and I'm like, why did we buy a Lego set when all you're going to do is mix it together? And then sometimes we go back and we get the instruction book and we say, okay, let's try to rebuild that thing. And guess what you can never do? You never can make it look like the thing on the box anymore. Now you got these like yellow pieces and you're making substitutes and, well, I don't really have guns anymore, so I have to use this thing. We lost that piece. And that's the thing that makes me frustrated. We never can get it back to how it looked on the box. And I don't want to mix the sets. And then I realize I am Lord Business. I really am. I just want the boxes to stay in the boxes. And sometimes when my kids build one of these expensive models that's taken hours and hours, I think I would like to get the Craggle and Craggleize it. And they can sit on a shelf, and we can come and look at it and go, there it is, perfect and complete, just like it should be. But then I have begun to learn what the characters in the Lego movie learn by the end of the movie. When we mix the sets, we actually expand the possibilities. When you start to mix sets, that's when creativity kicks in. That's when you come up with things that weren't even just on a piece of paper, but they're more than you could have imagined. Math quiz. If you have one Lego piece, how many things can you build with that? One, that's right. If you have six Lego pieces, how many possible combinations can you build? Over a million. Isn't that crazy? I did the math on this and I didn't know how it worked, so I'm just trusting that's true. So I was watching this other documentary on Legos, right? Because it's part of my research for the project here. And in this, they had this scientist, and he's trying to solve this problem. And it's not world hunger or you know, the grand unified theory. What he's trying to solve is this. How many potential combinations can we build out of existing Legos on this planet? You know, this guy is using his education for great purpose. And he's standing there in front of this blackboard, and it's one of those giant ones filled with equations. And I'm watching him going, how many? And this is what he said. This blew me away when I saw it. He goes, we can't figure it out. We don't know what the ceiling is. We can't come up with the equation that will help us figure out just how many. We don't know this number. It's really, it's uncountable. He used like a better science word, but that's what he was basically saying. And I got blown away by that. I thought, how exciting it must be for God to say, with all that I've created, I can come up with a city that you can't even dream of yet. You can't even put together all your little existing instruction books, can't even come close to what I'm building. And the more pieces I have, the more amazing it's going to be. Here's the principle for this morning. The kingdom builds best when we mix the sets. The kingdom of God, this thing that he's building, builds best when we mix the sets. Now, you know where I learned this principle from? Jesus Christ. When you follow him in the Gospels, he's always mixing the sets. He's taking his set of followers, and he's mixing them with people. First of all, he mixed the set in the first place. He's like, I'm going to take a fisherman. I'm going to take a political rebel here. I'm going to take a tax collector. I'm going to take somebody that doesn't even really, I don't even know if he's going to believe in me or not. Put them all together in this thing. And then he takes that set, and he's always mixing his set of disciples with tax collectors or prostitutes, rabbis and rebels, Samaritans and sinners. And then he's always taking his set into different places. He's going into areas no one else would go into. He's having conversations with people no one else would talk to. He's going into parties and to the festivals. And he's taking his set, and he's always mixing the sets. And it's somehow that's a major way he was going to spread the kingdom. And the night before he died, he prayed for us. He prayed for all of his followers. And it's an interesting prayer. Listen to what he said in John 17. I pray that they will all be one, just as you and I are one, Father. He's talking to God. As you are in me, Father, and as I am in you, and may they be in us. Why? Why is he praying that these sets would kind of mix together? For what purpose? What is it? Read it with me. So that the world will believe you sent me. You don't find examples of Jesus praying that the kingdom will grow, but you do find Jesus praying that we would be as one. Now, that doesn't mean that he's asking us all to be in the same set. He's not asking us all to look alike and dress alike and speak alike. He's not praying for unanimity. He's praying for unity. Because when a bunch of people who are already alike fit together, that's not that impressive. But when people who, by all rights and means, should have nothing in common, should be violently disagreeing with one another, should be on opposite ends of every kind of political and scientific spectrum and whatever, but when they all come together and they said, there's something that brings us together, and his name is Jesus. That's impressive. So what he's praying is this. He's saying, Father, I pray that all of your Legos, men, women, Greek, Jew, black, white, poor, rich, would mix together in one set around me. Now this prayer he prayed starts to take place even while he was on earth. But after he dies and after he rises from the dead and he leaves us behind in Acts chapter 2, we start to see what it could look like for a group of people to say, what if we lived now like the city that's not yet? And here's a description of it in Acts chapter 2. These believers, this mixed set of people, began to devote themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and the prayers. And awe came upon every soul, and many wonders and signs were being done through the apostles. And all who believed were together. They had all things in common. They were selling their possessions and belongings and distributing the proceeds to all as any had need. This is the life God intended for us. This is a description. And we know behind that there was arguing and all kinds of things. But just for a minute, look at this. This is what God said. This is what I was hoping for. This is what I wanted. This is how I wanted you all to live together. This is a glimpse of a city that's not founded on vengeance, but founded on forgiveness. And as these believers said, we're going to live out now in light of the not yet city, what happened? Jesus' prayer came true. Look at the next verse. And day by day, attending the temple together and breaking bread in their homes, they received their food with glad and generous hearts, praising God, having favor with all the people, the city around them. And then Jesus' prayer came true. And the Lord added to their number day by day those who were being saved. When we live this way, the world is interested and they want to believe. Now, I said that even though we read this, it sounds so perfect. You're like, wow, that sounds nothing like this group I'm in. Or it doesn't sound anything like, I'm going to go find that place. Well, it's a little idealistic because we're just seeing this part. But something that is going on behind there, the sets weren't completely mixed. You see, in Acts chapter 2, in this group was mainly a group of Jewish believers who had said, yes, we'll accept Jesus as a Messiah. And isn't it great that now we Jewish people finally have our Messiah and we have our act together and we can start seeing this set build among us? But who they didn't have a lot of were non-Jewish people, Gentiles. They were a little nervous about bringing them into the set because would they mess up this thing that they were building? As you go on down in Acts chapter 10, it's a story of God mixing the sets. And in chapter 10 of Acts, Peter, one of the main apostles here, gets a vision from God where God says, here are the sets you used to keep separate, and now I'm going to mix them together. And Peter took this vision and he preached a brand new message, and it was this. Everyone who believes in him receives forgiveness of sins through his name. My point is this, when these early believers began to say, let's bring more people in, let's open up the sets, let's mix this in, and they started acting like they're part of the not yet city in the very now, walls came down. The city became so much more than we ever could have imagined. It's more great, it's more unimaginable for us to consider all these different mixings and think about what this city is going to be like. But when Jesus left the earth, he only had 120 people saying, I'm a part of your set. At the end of that first century, there were thousands saying, I'm a part of that set. By the end of the next century, there was 1.25 million people saying, I'm a part of that set. Today, billions believe. If I were to summarize kind of the progress of Christianity from Christ up to where we are today, it seems to be that the Lego instruction manual for the progress of Christianity is three simple steps. Create a community of unity around Christ, mix the sets, and keep building. Now, I don't want to lose you on this metaphor. To me, mixing the sets is this. It's when we, without compromise, find ways to get our sets of belief around other sets of belief, to get our sets of community around other sets of community, to allow these friction points where we're interacting with people that are strange and unfamiliar to us so that the announcement of the not yet city can go. What does it look like for us to mix the sets? Well, before I get into some examples of how we've done that at Pulpit Rock, I want to give you a moment to reflect on how God might have a role for you in the not yet city that he's building, that you could play a part there. When we begin to mix the sets and we say, God, I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm going to trust that if we mix the sets, you can bring some kind of order. You can bring something. You can build something out of this. As you think about mixing the sets with people who look different than you or believe different than you or act different than you, here are a few questions to think about. What do you fear about mixing the sets? What makes you nervous or afraid? What are things that you think you might lose when you do that? What are things that God might right now say to you, but you could gain this? Let's take a moment and reflect together with God. As I reflect on what it might mean for me to mix the sets with people in my life, sometimes I'm afraid I might get asked questions I don't have good answers to. I like being here with you. We're coming from a similar kind of conversational background, and I get asked questions, and I kind of know those answers. But when I mix the sets, I'm around other people who maybe don't know the lingo, or they don't accept some of the things that we've just come to accept as Christians by belief, and I get challenged on a question. It makes me really nervous that I would be embarrassed. I wouldn't know what to say. Sometimes, and especially as a dad, I get nervous about mixing the sets with my kids and their friends and wondering, well, what if the other sets have more of an influence on my kids than my kids have on them? That makes me nervous. Sometimes I think about what I could gain when I mix the sets, and I realize that when I have conversations with people who come out of a different background, maybe racially or theologically or socioeconomic, I learn things. I see my faith in a new way, and sometimes it causes me to reevaluate, why do I actually believe this? And that's a good thing instead of a scary thing. Sometimes I gain an understanding that I need to be a little bit more humble about what I believe. Sometimes I gain the understanding that the reason I believe something is because someone told me one time when I was young and I never really thought more about it and just accepted it. There's a lot I can gain when I mix the sets. The kingdom builds best when we mix the sets. When we find ways without compromise to allow our set of relationships to get into connection with another set of relationships and see what God can do. Let me give you three ways that our small groups at Pulpit Rock really live this out. I want to share a couple stories with you and walk you through a little bit of how we do that. Here's the first one. We mix the sets when we live in unity. In Acts chapter 2, I don't think it was impressive to people that they were living this way. I don't think that was just it. What was impressive was, here's a group of people that have come together and they have a bunch of disagreements and stuff, and yet they've chosen to live in unity with one another. I think that's impressive. It's impressive to this world. It's not impressive to this world when Christians who all believe the same things agree on something, but when Christians who disagree come together and say, we center on Christ. In some ways, I wonder if the variety of Christianity that you see is a good thing or a bad thing. Does it help or hinder this cause? Personally, in my life, I'm striving to make connections with pastors in the city just to build friendships and connection around what brings us together rather than on the minor points that we disagree on. And as these early believers committed and said, we're going to live now like we're all part of the not yet, people said, I would like to get in on that. I begin to wonder that maybe the best way for someone to enter this community of faith called Pulpit Rock is not through this room, but through your living room. That's probably a better spot. I mean, if they come here, they can get some teaching, they can see people worship, they can have a little bit of fellowship, but when they are in your living room, they can really see how living now is done in light of the not yet. How do people who believe in the not yet deal with miscarriages? With marital strife, with financial failures, with kids who are making crazy mistakes and decisions. And when they're in your living room and it's not sanitized and we don't have like a put together message or anything and they're getting to see, okay, so this Christianity thing is real. Man, you're really trying to live in light of that. That when we mix those sets, they can see it. I'm struck by the fact that in Acts it said that they did life together by, quote, breaking bread where? In their homes. Don't you know some of those homes were messy and had drama and trauma all over them, and that's where they were doing it. This is why we spent the last 2 weeks here, and I encourage you to hear them if you haven't, talking about what's important in our groups, how we welcome one another, how we care, how we confront, how we consider one another. We're trying to do that first step, just creating a community of unity where people can see the kingdom lived out. Let me ask you a question. As you think about your small group, I hope you can discuss this week. How are you doing at reflecting the city that's not yet? How are you doing the now in light of the city that's not yet? There's a second way I think that we mix the sets, not just in the way we treat one another, but we mix the sets when we invite others in. This seems to be this dominant swell of the gospel. You see it really clearly in a guy named Matthew. I love Matthew. In Matthew, he wrote a gospel, and in this gospel, in chapter 9, he told this story about himself. He said, as Jesus was walking along, he saw a man named Matthew. That's me, he said, sitting at his tax collector's booth. Now, back then, as you know, it's almost a cliche, but it's true. These guys were not respected. They were cheats. They cheated their own people, their own racial groups. They were turncoats. They were considered to be traitors. And he's alone in his tax collector's booth. Jesus decides to mix up the sets and says, "Follow me and be my disciple." So Matthew got up and followed him. Now, what happened is Matthew says, "Okay, I'm going to leave my old set behind, and I'm going to join this new set called disciples." But look what happens in verse 10. Later, Matthew invited Jesus and his disciples to his home as dinner guests, along with who? With who? It's right there. Many tax collectors and other disreputable sinners. Matthew was mixing the sets. And what I love is that it's verse 9 and verse 10. It's not like Matthew had some kind of evangelism training. He didn't go to some discipleship class. He didn't get a pin to wear on his shirt. He's only been with Jesus a little while, but Matthew understood a basic principle, and it's this. I love this set of my friends, even though I could see now maybe some things were wrong. And I love this new set of my friends centered around Jesus Christ. What if these two great tastes would taste great together? What if we could mix them together somehow? And he didn't even have a plan. I don't know that he had an agenda. I don't know that he was like, "Okay, Jesus, now well, we're going to have, after the second course is served, that's when I want you to get up and I want you to share those 3 points about, you know, the kingdom and all this." No. I think he just said, "Let's get together and eat dinner and we'll see what God can build." We actually have a photo of this dinner, and here it is. That's it. Doesn't actually look like it because of the white plastic chairs. That's actually a photo of one of our small groups that took advantage of the Game Changer Fund. If you remember, we raised some money in last year's Christmas offering, and we said, we want this money to sit around and wait for one of your groups to come and say, we want to take money from the church. Kind of a crazy thought, right? And so many of you groups applied for money and got money. This is what this group did. They said, we want to mix the sets in our neighborhood. In this neighborhood, they have 28 homes. So they passed out flyers. They took the money. They got some hamburgers together, some hot dogs. They invited their entire street to a party. Half the street showed up. Now, they listened to the Broncos game. They grilled out. They collected information. They're actually building this street directory so that they could each know each other and build some relationships. They even had the police respond to a drunk guy who drove down the street 3 times. That's when it's a party, right? The cops are showing up. This is what I think that Matthew's party was a lot like. And my favorite part and my least favorite part of the whole story is that one of the neighbors was like, "I just don't understand. I'm just surprised that a church would want to do something like this." Could it be they're surprised because so often the approach we've taken as Christians when we think about mixing the sets is this? Or maybe it's this with qualifications. And yet here's a party where we just say, we want to hang out together. How is your group doing at welcoming others in? As you think about your group, maybe think about over the last couple years, are there new faces? Are you guys welcome and open to that? Let me give you a quick side note here, just real quick. I get that there is a very real tension that we have, and we're going to have it now until we get to the not yet, and it's this. When you have invested so much time in building a small group, and you have followed the instructions, and you've put piece by piece, and you have people that you've trusted with secrets, and you've told jokes to, and you guys have been through pain together, and all that, and you finally get it the way you want, and then someone like Scott Custer, one of our pastors here, calls you up and says, "Hey, I was wondering if you might be willing to take another couple or people into your group." And you look at what you've built, and you just wish you could craggleize it. And so you tell Scott these great spiritual words, "I'm sorry, Scott, we're full." I've done that. It's hard, man. You don't want to, it's a tension, it's a real tension, I get it. But I want you to consider this. Could it be that your group could become better by mixing in a set? Someone that maybe doesn't know all your lingo, know all your jokes, know all your history. We have so many new people here at Pulpit Rock. How will they experience community if we say, "Sorry, we're full"? We mix the sets when we live in unity with each other. We mix the sets when we invite others in. But I want to share this last one real quick, and it's this. We mix the sets when we invest on the outside. See, building the city of God is not just about building a community and saying, "Okay, come on, come and see what we've done." We mix the sets when we're like Jesus and we're willing to go out to unfamiliar and even uncomfortable places. A few years ago, our church did a serving day. You may remember this if you're here about 4 years ago. We invited everyone in our church to come. We had about 150 people show up, and we went all over the city in teams, and we served. We went to different neighborhoods, went to different things, and we served. Our group, my family, partnered with another couple families, and we went to this food pantry downtown. Now, we spent the entire day, and the guys, we were cleaning out the shower stalls where people that were homeless took showers, and the girls were here pouring shampoo in the bottles to get it into this thing for these guys and everything. At the end of the day, we left, and we felt like we'd really, you know, done something good, and we had, and it was a great first step. But there's something that day that bothered me, and it nagged at me, and I didn't figure out what it was until today. Maybe you figured out what it was. We didn't mix the sets. I mean, we were there. There was no one else there but the one guy who was like, well, I'm going to open up the door and show you where everything is. Thanks a lot. And then he left and he worked and he came back later and was like, okay, thanks a lot. And when we left, it's like we took all of our Lego sets and we counted to make sure we had each kid, right? We got each piece and we took them back with us and we went back home and we said, boy, that was great. We really did something. Contrast that with what another one of our groups did this summer. So one of our small groups said, we really want to think about not just doing a drive-by project, but we want to build a relationship. So one of them had a connection with this group called Family Life Services in our city. What they do is they house single moms who have kids, and they provide a place for some rent assistance and a place for them to live while they're getting back on their feet. So they befriended these 9 families, and they had a barbecue in April. I hope you're really tracking with how powerfully God uses food in the lives of people. You track? I don't want that lost on you. So they started talking to these families, and they're like, hey, what kind of things do you need? And you know, do you need people to bring food? And they go, you know, it's just hard in this situation to help our kids eat healthy and how to teach them how to eat healthy. And a light went off. And this group said, all right, what if we came and built a garden? So I heard they were building a garden, and I had an image of, you know, like a couple of little rows in the dirt. Look what they built. That's amazing, right? It's got like the walls so the deer can't get in and they can't jump over, and it's clean, and they've got all this creative stuff going on here. Well, they built this and then they said, okay, we got to come back because we got to show you how to plant in the garden. And then we're going to come back in a couple months and show you how to harvest some of the things in the garden. They're going to come back again, and do you see what they did? They didn't build a garden, they built a relationship. They mixed the sets. Then they started talking to them. They said, well, how's it going? Oh, it's great. Our kids, you know, they're loving it. It's kind of summertime, and they don't really have a lot to do. And, well, hey, we have a sports camp at our church. Would you like to come? Oh, that'd be so great. I don't think we could afford that. Oh, don't worry about it. We're going to go back and build relationships, and we're going to do a bake sale. We're going to raise some scholarship money so that these kids can go to the sports camp. Do you see what I'm saying? This is what happens when we start to mix the sets and say, we're going to live now. This is the kind of thing we do in the not yet city, but we're going to do it now. Well, let me close. Our time is gone. I wanted to share some of the stories with you, but let me kind of wrap it up with this. When we go back to the Lego movie for a minute, there's really deep lessons here. Lord Business turns out to be, guess who? Just a misguided dad who was just trying to keep things the way he liked them. Well, at the end of this movie, he's begun to see that maybe that's not the best approach, that maybe mixing the sets is going to allow a better purpose to be created. And so he starts to pour out the antidote to the Craggle to begin to free up the sets, to begin to mix again. Let's watch what he learned.
I liked Emmett before it was cool.
Whoops, I have the antidote for the Craggle. How did that happen?
Yay! Hey, Craggler!
What's this?
Oh, Yay. Mommy, Daddy, you're okay!
Oh, son!
Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad.
We're okay, son.
Hey, guys. Time to come up for dinner. It's Taco Tuesday, your favorite.
Okay, honey. We'll be up in a sec.
Yeah, we'll be up in a sec.
I gotta tell you something.
What?
Now that I'm letting you come down here and play, guess who else gets to come down here and play?
Who?
Your sister.
What?
I love that because even after all we've learned, there are still sets of people that we're not that comfortable mixing with. Most of them might be our little sisters. I love Pulpit Rock. Pulpit Rock is teaching me so much about mixing the sets. I learn in my conversations with you, and I just sometimes sit back and I watch them like, wow, that is great. I am learning more and more about how so many families in our church are mixing the sets in the foster care community in our world, where they're saying, we're going to mix the sets in a really radical way. we're going to bring somebody outside in. I love conversations I'm having with some people in our church who are troubled by the events in our country, and they're asking questions like, how do we build bridges in between some of these racial walls that seem to be built? I love people in our church that are showing me in very practical ways what it looks like to build bridges between the church or Christian community and the gay and lesbian community. How do we build some things together there? But I know this, and like that clip just showed us, mixing the sets can still be messy, chaotic, and confusing. But we have a kingdom to announce. We have a city founded on forgiveness, and it's worth it to have as many people as possible as a part of it. And when we mix the sets together with one another in unity, when we mix the sets by inviting people in, when we mix the sets by saying, I'm willing to take my set of comfort and mix it in with a group of people that are unfamiliar to me, by investing my lives in the community around me, we will find that we truly are better together. Will you pray with me? God, one of the greatest challenges I think that we face is stepping out of comfortable into different sets with different pieces and different challenges. And yet you did that so often, and you have modeled this for us as you stepped out of the set of heaven and you stepped into the most messy, confusing, and chaotic place in the whole universe, us. Because you did that, we can now have a city founded on forgiveness. I pray you'd begin to show us areas of our lives where we're closed off to mixing sets, and that you'd begin to show us what it looks like without compromise to open our sets up to mix with others, that we might learn, that we might serve, and that we might partner with you in building the city that is not yet. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.